I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for a weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Now, we usually save the shop for Friday, but we're a day early this week in honor of the Independence Day holiday. We have a special Independence Day program for you, which we hope you'll like. So, sitting in the chairs for a shape-up a day early this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and editor Nick Charles. Welcome, everybody. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, yo, that dude is in the building, and welcome to the shop. How we living?
Hey.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, man, doing all right.
All right, man. Well, the Supreme Court voted 5-4 in favor of white firefighters in New Haven, Connecticut, alleging discrimination in promotion practices. Now, Ruben, you wrote a piece for the San Diego Tribune, and you're a little disappointed. Tell us why.
Right, I'm disappointed. I mean, let me put my cards on the table here.
Please.
I am and have been for the last 10, 15 years a critic of racial preferences because I think it hurts. They hurt the very people they're supposed to be helping by lowering standards and stigmatizing beneficiaries and all that. But I have never gone along with this idea of a white male victim, somehow that white males are being victimized systematically and discriminated against by these preference programs and by affirmative action. And apparently the Supreme Court disagrees with me because they found fault with a policy in New Haven, Connecticut, where the fire department there threw out a promotion exam because zero African-Americans scored high enough on the exam to earn a promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote about that, and I have been catching holy hell all week long from folks who are upset with me and who do think that white males are being discriminated against. So there it be.
There it be, bro. You know what? Sonia Sotomayor was on the federal appeals bench that originally upheld the decision, you know, in a very, very brief one-paragraph ruling. Now, Nick, some people think this is about her. What do you think?
I don't know if it's about her, but it definitely smacks of revisionist history. I think the court, and to Ruben's credit, even though he and I don't see eye to eye on racial preferences, definitely the idea that there's a white male victim, they discount the fact of the historical imbalance in occupations, particularly municipal occupations like the fire department. Now, in Sotomayor's siding with the appeals court in her decision, their decision was to uphold what New Haven, the municipality itself, said. Now, we have an activist court that goes around and just changes it and saying that, you know, the threat of what the city was worried about was getting lawsuits from minority firefighters who scored lower on the test. But the thing about it, throwing out the test, finding a better test is what should have happened. They should have sent it back. And the city could have gotten a better test. The lower court could have said, well, you know, you have to make these tests a certain way, but it didn't do that. Now they are really going after the civil rights gains of the 60s by saying, yeah, we can now say that while male, there'll be white male victims and female, white female victims. When these Title VII, which is the specific Civil Rights Act that is being challenged here, was put into place specifically because blacks and Latinos and Asians were not getting a fair shake in any kind of employment.
Can I ask Arsalan a question? Jimmy, because you know what I'm intrigued by is why this has become a sort of a litmus test for Sonia Sotomayor when eight other federal judges agreed with her. The first district judge who made the initial ruling supporting the city and throwing out the test. It was a three-member appeals court panel of which she was only one member. And then four members of the Supreme Court also agreed with her. So I'm just curious about why this has become a referendum on her.
I think it's just a political ploy by conservatives. I think, you know, as a civil rights lawyer here in the barbershop, for me, this is the perfect storm. This is the perfect legal double-edged sword. I think that New Haven was worried that had they thrown the test out, they were gonna face lawsuits on either side. And so what they tried to do was err on the side of what they figured to be caution. What I think this is more a testament to is the power of Justice Kennedy now. Justice Kennedy is now the new Sandra Day O'Connor. He is the new swing vote in the Supreme Court. And I think it does show the conservative leaning of the court now. And really, I mean, Justice Kennedy was the one who wrote the majority opinion in the 93-page brief. I think that one of the things that I think a lot of people are commentating that one of the prudent things to have done was perhaps give the promotions, but then revisit the fact whether these tests were in fact, you know, the best way to decide who was going to be promoted to either lieutenants or captains. And so I think the Justice Kennedy factor should not be underscored.
Can I just ask one more question before we move on? Because I know Jimmy wants to talk about other things, that particularly his column on The Root, which got some like 800 comments, like the most commented. But I mean, he's too modest to mention this. But can I just ask one other thing, which is that this has been called activism on the part of the Supreme Court. And I just wanted to ask you, as the civil rights lawyer here, why is it being called that by some, by liberal critics in particular? It's called an example of judicial activism.
It's considered judicial activism because in Title VII, there is a thing called disparate impact. And the disparate impact standard, you know, revolves around if a practice or a policy is neutral on its face but has a disparate impact on, you know, a certain class of people, that policy would be considered discriminatory. Now, Justice Alito, in a separate brief, actually went so far as to, you know, say that we should throw out the disparate impact standard of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. And so, you know, we're entering into sort of a new legal realm now where, you know, we're seeing a conservative court trying to change the law.
You know what?
And Michelle, this is Ruben. Let me jump in if I can.
Quickly. Just,
there was no suspense in my mind about how Sam Alito would come down on this. Alito went to the same two schools that Sonia Sotomayor did, Princeton and Yale Law School. Unfortunately, he didn't do as well academically at those schools as she did.
Nice.
But it's true. And nonetheless, when he graduated from Princeton and Yale Law School, he joined an organization called the Concerned Alumni of Princeton. Basically, their goal was to keep out African-Americans, Latinos, and women from Princeton. So he's always been a foe of affirmative action. This was a friendly court. This was the right moment in time for the firefighters of New Haven.
Right.
They caught a massive break because the people who were at the table really were receptive to this argument. But Arsalan's absolutely right. The rules were one way last week on civil rights cases. They're now a different way. They've been rewritten. That's called judicial activism.
Hmm. Yeah, you know what? This could be a setback. And speaking of setbacks, South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford's mouth is kind of a setback. He's setting back his own cause, you know, who is his own worst enemy as his infidelity issues continue to chug along. He's talking about, you know, this is no, he's going all Sade on us. This is no ordinary love type ish. So what's that about? You know what? I love his wife, though.
He needs to be quiet. He needs to be
quiet. Well, yeah, can I just play a short clip from he gave?
It's not
just bad enough that he got this press conference where he spilled his guts and told us all how he felt, how he really, really felt. Then he had, for reasons that escaped me, had this long interview with the Associated Press where he talked about his love connection. So I'm just going to play a short clip.
Yeah, drop it.
I'm quite certain that there were a handful of instances wherein I crossed lines that I shouldn't have crossed as a married man, but never crossed the ultimate line.
Like, was it
which is way more than I wanted to know. Way more than
TMI, baby.
I wanted to know. Let me just jump in for just a hot minute to say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having a special Thursday barbershop a day early, recognizing the Independence Day holiday. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Nick Charles, Ruben Navarrete, and Arsalan Iftikhar. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. It's like, you know, I guess, as it turns out, he met with his mistress, you know, more times than he mentioned. And he even had some other honeys on the side. My dude, he hangs out with Bishop Don Juan. Seriously, this cat. You know what? You know what's interesting? 14 of 47 state senators and 6 newspapers are calling for dude to resign. A-Train.
Yeah.
How do you call it?
Well, I honestly, I'm tired of hearing about Mark Sanford's unrequited love. I mean, you know, this sounds like something that should be coming out of the Lifetime Movie Network or something.
Dude, you're just not a romantic, bro.
No,
that's right.
Honestly,
well, he's a married man now.
The one person I do give mad props to is Jenny Sanford.
Yeah,
I think,
no doubt,
you know,
right?
She's a former Wall Street executive, you know, the mother of 4 grown boys who, you know, basically said, you know, he has to, you know, live up to what he's done, and you know, here is a woman who's not standing by her man, and
she kicked him out.
Yeah, I'm proud of her. I think that you know, I think that he is a, you know, he was a top tier 2012 Republican potential contender along with John Ensign of Nevada, both of whom in the last few weeks have admitted to these affairs. But I give mad props to Jenny Sanford.
Go ahead, Nick.
I have nothing. Poor Mark Sanford. I think, you know, the man is heartfelt when he said he loved this woman. But the thing, the miscalculation he makes is this. People may, in some respect, sometimes excuse or feel sympathy with you if you have some carnal failings. Like, let's say, David Paterson, who admitted to having affairs, the governor of New York.
Right.
But when you talk about you loving somebody else, That's the big slap. He now says he loves somebody else, which means he does not love his wife.
Nick, you've never been in love, Nick?
What?
You've never been in love, Nick?
I'm in love right now.
With his wife.
That's right.
That's right.
I will be forever.
Timmy, these are not hard questions, baby. This is not a hard thing.
Yeah, exactly. Ruben, you're right.
Love your wife.
Right. But yeah, that's the thing. You can't say, you can't go on national TV, especially through the AP or whatever, and say, you know, I made mistakes, I had an affair, and I love the woman I had the affair with. You can't do that. And that's what he's doing.
You know what I think he's doing? I think he's trying to get in front of anybody else snitching him out. That's what I think. I don't think it's all as altruistic and peaches and herb and as he's trying to make it out to be. I think dude is trying to prevent himself from somebody else busting him out, you know, because, I mean, apparently dude is a prolific player, you know, and, you know, we might just be seeing the tip of the ice, this particular iceberg, you know what I mean? So, wow.
Well, the narcissism is remarkable. Go ahead. Ruben wrote about that. Go ahead.
I got to get in on this. Here's the thing. When we are a twisted society, this does not speak well of us because we have less problem with men, politicians who come forward and sort of use and discard women, you know, interns and the like, we forgive them. Then we do this guy who actually fell in love with his mistress. The problem is, and I'm not excusing, that's twisted. I'm not excusing Sanford. I think where he's blowing it is, you do not come forward and say, you know, this woman was my soulmate. I'm going to try to fall in love with my wife again.
Exactly.
Which is what he's saying. Your wife is changing the locks. She's putting out a contract on you. Let me just say this. There was a moment, apparently, this is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. After he tells Jenny Sanford about this affair, he asks her for permission to go visit the mistress for the weekend.
Well, yeah, that's...
Let me just say right now, it's a good thing Jenny Sanford is not a Latina or a sister, because that would have been a short conversation. She'd have been like, excuse me, I'm going to go to the kitchen and get some cutlery and take care of this.
You know what? I think there's a lack of women out there having affairs with their husbands. And let me just say, Arianna Huffington, if you're out there... You know, you think you want to step out, you holler at your boy. All right, I'm just going to put
Call
that
me.
Out there.
Call me.
Yeah. Give me a ring-a-ding-ding. All right, let's keep it in motion.
Hear his phone ringing. Do you?
No, I don't hear my phone.
It's not because it's on silent. But anyway, go ahead, Jimmy.
All right, well, keeping it in motion, you know, pop star Michael Jackson sadly passed away a week ago?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's not going to be resting in peace anytime soon. The scramble for his estate is on, and you know it's a circus. When Al Sharpton comes to town, and the mics and the cameras, and the curls, oh my, Nick, please.
Well, this is what, you know, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson have been reduced to. They used to be at the forefront of civil rights and important political questions, and now they're in the forefront of finding out, you know, how, you know, who's going to get Michael Jackson's estate.
Right.
That's really sad. It is a circus. It's going to continue to be a circus, and this is just a sad legacy that's going to be part of Michael Jackson's history. You know, the music is going to fade, and all you're going to have up front is people, lawyers and more lawyers, getting paid to figure out who gets part of the spoils, who gets the kids. And, you know, I want to mention Jimmy Israel's brilliant piece for TheRoot.com called Shameless Joe Jackson, about Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's father, who I've never liked, you know, and he has thrown his quote-unquote true colors at the BET Awards last week, talking about his new company on the red carpet, and his son wasn't even cold yet. You know, my thing is, where were you when the guy weighed 112 pounds? Where were you when his pinprick body was basically calling out because it was in some pain? Where were you? But at the end of it all, you can talk about all you can take care of the kids.
thanks for that shout out, man. You know what I think is that you know, I want Debbie Rowe to step back on the scene. You know, and to step up and be a mother to these children. You know, because you and I can't name a surgery-free normal Jackson that we think would make a good parent to this child. And Diana Ross, really? What, Flavor Flav's not available? Rasputin?
Wait a minute. I don't understand. Her qualification was her willingness to serve as a surrogate, okay, as a gestational surrogate. So tell me how that... Is there a double standard here? Because as a biological parent, because she was a gestational surrogate, that makes her more qualified than people who, however odd in their antics they may seem to us, at least family. I mean, in fact, in his will, he wanted his mother to be guardian.
Right.
And barring that, Diana Ross. Now, people there are grandmothers all over this country, Jimmy, who are raising children, whether we think that's okay or not, with a lot less support than she's likely to have. I have to ask.
Michelle, there's no biological imperative that because Debbie Rowe is the biological mother that she's going to be a better parent. But let's be honest. I know you look at these folks and you think they're kind of odd. They're more than kind of odd. And the kind of sheltering, the kind of nurturing that these kids need, and they're not going to get from any of those Jacksons.
Ruben, you want to have the last word on this?
I'm going to tell you, I mean, Catherine Jackson and Joe Jackson are two different, you know, kettles of fish on this. I'm glad These reports that they have lived apart from each other, husband and wife, for about 10 years now. She lives in L.A. He lives in Las Vegas. Father lives in Las Vegas. Obviously, if they lived together, that would not be a safe place for those children. Let's just be honest about this. Before he died, on numerous occasions, Michael Jackson talked about abuse at the hands of his father. It's alleged. It's been alleged. Michael Jackson obviously felt that way. You know, where was Joe Jackson in all of this? He was in part responsible for many of the insecurities that Michael carried throughout his life. So this is not Father of the Year. This is not somebody who was ever on it. But I'm with Jimmy on this idea of like where Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are. I mean, this is crazy. You know, suddenly like Al Sharpton's dancing at the Apollo and, you know, trying to like get his another 15 minutes off this deal. No, going around saying no Jacko, no peace. You know,
let's realize one thing though. Let's all realize one thing that, you know, the reason Al Sharpton started his career was with James Brown. So he has some connection to the entertainment industry. He worked for a long time and was, you know, favorite son of the Godfather. And he also had his hairstyle because of the Godfather. So it's not that he doesn't know these folks. He doesn't know the arena. What I'm saying is that they should not be in the forefront of this kind of movement to find out what's going on. And before you turn around, the DEA is now involved in finding out what's going on. It's going to be every alphabet soup company from the ASPCA on trying to find out what happened to this man.
Well, and you know, I totally co-sign, you know, Jimmy's column, Shameless Joe Jackson. I mean, I remember my wife and I were watching the BET red carpet live, and you know, when Joe Jackson came to give his first interview, you know, to have the audacity to, you know, drop a plug in for his new Buck Nasty label or whatever it was. I mean, it was just, it was appalling. I mean, and when asked about the death of his son, you know, he said, you know, we lost the biggest superstar in the world. Well, no, you lost your son. Yeah, you lost your son. And so it did show just a detachment from reality.
Well, can I just say, I'm not defending any of this. I think it shows a detachment from our reality. I mean, many of us feel, you know, as writers, you know, oftentimes when we lose somebody, we write something and people wonder, how could you do that? Because we're writers. That's what writers do. And I know it's distasteful for many of us, but entertainers, sometimes they feel that that is what they are here to do, that they are there to do that. And it's a different world. And I'm a little uncomfortable with our being so quick to judge a world that we are not a part of.
There's nobody in the animal kingdom who wouldn't somehow mourn the death of a child.
We got to wrap it up. Michelle, back to you.
All right. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV1 Online. He joined us from Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, and he joined us from San Diego. Nick Charles is the executive editor for the green living site EchoMe.com. He joined us from our bureau in New York. And Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney, and he joined us in our studio in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you, and happy Independence Day.
Peace to you, too.
Peace. Have a good weekend.
Yep.
Thanks.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.